welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and the summer food I'm going to be missing this fall is in-season tomatoes.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and though, of course, you can eat frozen treats in the fall, I never do eat the ice cream sandwich called It's, which is a Bay Area specialty, anytime other than summer. So I'll miss you, It's, even though I could still technically buy you.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I had a lot of trouble coming up with an answer to this one because I don't think there's anything that I only eat during the summer. But I am, on the other side, very ready for it to cool down a little bit so that I can make my mom's homemade chili recipe, which always wins. And because that is definitely not a summer food, and, you know, it's summer all the time where I live, so I only get to make it, you know, like at the end of September.
When it's, so you're saying when it's chilly, you make chili?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
that's an easy way to remember when Neil's making chili.
Yeah. Is it chilly outside? Neil's making chili.
Oh, if only that. Oh, man, I would every day. It's such good chili. Put it on noodles, which is also a controversial thing.
Yeah,
Some people just don't do that.
I just recoiled when you said that. So,
well, you haven't had it the right way then. If it's not good,
it's true.
So this is our first post Labor Day episode of Storm of Spoilers in 2018, which means we're wrapping up the summer with a summer mailbag. It's the Earth's Mightiest Summer Mailbag. And then for our bonus segment this week, we'll be answering even more mailbag questions, but secret mailbag questions that we solicited from the Slack. If you want to join up and be part of that bonus segment, head to patreon.com/stormofspoilers.
I would like
and make sure to join up at the Maesters or above level. Go ahead, Neil.
I think we should clarify, though, that we not only solicited questions from the Slack, I believe Joanna's specific instruction was, let's get weird.
I asked for weird and invasive questions, and boy, did our Patreon subscribers deliver.
Yeah, right. So this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I've been told we each get to bow out of at least one question if it gets too invasive. So that's a good rule to know is going into the secret mailbag. But that will be our bonus segment this week if you're a Patreon subscriber. For the rest of you, we get to have reviews from you through Joanna for you right now.
Yes, we got a couple of reviews. This one comes from Binks Media, who said, these guys get it 5 stars. Just wanted to leave y'all a 5-star review. Took myself on a date last week. I didn't read this already, did I? Took myself on a date last week to see Crazy Rich Asians. My initial review to friends was, this is the first rom-com that made me cry. I really feel like maybe.
Yes, you did, because you asked Neil if he had cried.
All right, Binks Media, sorry to double dip there.
What did I say about the crying?
You said you got a little misty.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Misty. All right.
Just checking.
Also, I got distracted this time being like, is it Binks with an X? Like Zachary Binks?
It is. Like Hocus Pocus' very own Zachary Binks. Also, I apologize for all the sirens. Apparently, there is an emergency here in Oakland, California. All right. This second review comes from Zestit, maybe? 5 stars. Great Game of Thrones podcast with bonus pop culture insights. Love this podcast. Joanna, Dave, and Neil are funny and insightful. Thank you. I really enjoy their insights and commentary on all things movies and TV. Even if I don't plan on seeing all the stuff they talk about, I enjoy their hot takes. Looking forward to Game of Thrones final season with this crew. That is it. That is our only new review. So we are a little review short. In short supply right now, so if you guys want to leave us a review on iTunes, it would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Excellent. So that helps us, you know, find new people outside of completely separate from the Patreon I mentioned earlier. And then meanwhile, while we're doing these like themed episodes and polling you in various places, we also are doing our own little pop culture things, which is why Neil gets to check in with us every week. Neil, let's go storm chasing.
Ooh, yeah.
Pew.
All right, so we're talking about what pop culture storm you're chasing this week. I'm going to go ahead and start, because sometimes I do. I have two things. First, I was just, before we started recording, reading a really fun article by our friend Nadia, our Nadia. Mutual friend Nadia, who writes for Eater Austin's Eater, E-A-T-E-R. You know, you guys get it. But she was writing today about Ethan Hawke's go-to restaurants in Austin, and it reminded me that there are two places that I've not taken either of you when you've been in town that I really do love. Hut's Hamburgers, which is a place on 6th Street, which is just awesome. And Lucy's Fried Chicken. So I'm adding those to the list of where we'll go with Dave and or Joanna next time they're in town.
What, so when I'm there at the end of the month, can we go to one of those?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, right. See? That's how that works.
And if you don't follow Nadia on social media, you should, because Nadia like knows everything about where to eat in Austin if you're ever there. But she also has a great little photo with Ethan Hawke looking like, hey, we just ate all the things in Austin on her Instagram. So, Nadia, it's Nadia Chaudhry. So it's N-A-D-I-A, last name C-H-A-U-D-H-U-R-Y. She's at that spelling on Twitter and Instagram. So there you go.
Yeah, so go read it. It's dope. And if you ever come visit Austin, definitely check out Eater. They do a great job. I also wanted to talk about the movie Mandy.
Woo!
Which I saw this past week. I did this weird double feature where I watched a couple of screeners that had sort of been in my inbox that I've been, you know, I don't know how you guys organize your lives, but in my email, I will leave something as unread until I deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So what'll happen is I'll get through all my email and there's like a screener in there that I don't want to lose track of. And so I'll just leave it there. And it's just the one unread for like a week. So I finally cleaned that out, the other night. And, I did this double feature of Madeline's Madeline, which I'm sure Fighting in the War Room's talked about.
Maybe. I heard a rumor that someone on that podcast likes that movie.
Yeah, it's, I mean, first of all, we now know that ASMR works for Ehrlich, because that's what that movie is. Yeah, it's got this like audio texture to it. It's really amazing. And then I watched Mandy, which is the movie that I'm going to tell you about now, which is a film in which Andrea Riseborough and Nicolas Cage play a married couple who live out in the woods, basically. He's like a dude who chops down trees. She's an artist.
Lumberjack?
Yeah, he's a lumberjack. And then one day, the wife's character, she's walking down the street, and she gets spotted by some weird cult leader, and he decides that he needs her for something. And then they steal her from her husband, and it's all about Nicolas Cage fighting this cult. And it's by Panos Cosmatos, who's a filmmaker who did the film Beyond the Black Rainbow, if you've ever seen that. Anyway, he makes really weird movies that have these sort of like neon, grimy 70s, like trashy movie vibes to them. And it's a super fun movie if you enjoy things that are horrible. And the only way to describe Nicolas Cage's performance in Mandy is feral, because that's where he's at emotionally in this movie. And I had a lot of fun with it. It's like, it's insane and super weird and kind of gross and like way over the top. And it just sort of transported me to a different era of horror. And it was really fun.
I saw the trailer for this when I went to see Madeline's Madeline, and whoa. I had trouble figuring out exactly what the tone of the movie was until Nicolas Cage approaches a hulking mass in like a red lit night carrying a chainsaw, and that hulking mass reaches down to pull out his own chainsaw, and it keeps going and going because he has an extra long chainsaw that they're going to chainsaw fight with. And I'm like, you know what, Mandy, you win. I'm going to see you sometime.
Oh yeah, it's so awesome. Yeah. So, Mandy, I think it's in theaters next week, starting next week. So, if you like that kind of thing, and I will warn you, there's some gross stuff in this movie and some disturbing imagery and some violence. So, you know, be warned, I guess. but otherwise, go see it. Joanna, what is the storm you're chasing this week?
Oh, I'm going to once again like do something that's unfair and talk about something that's not out, which is the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina adaptation that's coming out on Netflix in October. So not for a while, but this is an adaptation of a recent run from the Archie Comics company. It is by the man who wrote those books and also the man who has been engineering the Riverdale, all of Archie Comics, really, and the Riverdale adaptation over on the CW, which is Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa. And this is the show stars Kiernan Shipka of Mad Men fame as Sabrina and a number of other great actors, including Lucy Davis, Richard Coyle, Michelle Gomez, from who's like Bananas great on Doctor Who and Bananas great here, and Miranda Otto and Bronson Pinchot, and I don't know what else you want in this world.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Bronson Pinchot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Haven't heard that name in a hot sec.
Well, here you go. Cousin Balky himself has come to Greendale. This is a show that is not, like, overlapping with Riverdale, though I'm, like, three episodes in, and they have mentioned Riverdale once. But that's it. The comics do overlap, but only kind of, in that, like, the continuity doesn't overlap. Or it's complicated, I guess, because there is, like, the run of the Jughead comics where Jughead goes on dates with Sabrina, but that's a different Sabrina than who's in The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and I know I sound exactly like Dave right now, and I apologize, but the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina comics is amazing. It's, like, super gothic. It's very, like, Rosemary's Baby. It's very, like, the art is very 60s horror gothic sort of thing, and it's, like, really creepy and cool, and that's exactly what they're adapting. So though you have some of the stock characters, like Salem the Cat or her boyfriend Harvey, you know, your aunts Hilda and Zelda, all of that stuff, it's nothing to do with the Melissa Joan Hart TV show, which, you know, all of this comes from the original Sabrina comics. So yeah, they all have the same characters in common because they come from the old Sabrina comics, which started in the 60s. But, you know, to tide yourself over or maybe to prepare yourself for the Netflix show, because it is very good, very atmospheric, really fun, I would go in and check out the comics, which you can, you know, get wherever you get comics. I would get them off Comixology. There's probably some kind of good sale going on. There usually is when an adaptation's coming up. And as The Chilling Adventure of Sabrina, you will know it by the cover art, which is very spooky. So that's what I've been sort of obsessing about right now.
Nice.
Dave.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So my thing, I think I've talked about before, but I'm in the middle of flirting with Fortnite to see what the hubbub's about. And I might have briefly described it to you guys, but just to recap, Fortnite has these things called Battle Passes, which the game's free to play. It's a game where 100 people skydive onto an island and you loot for resources and weapons and you try to kill each other and then build forts to protect yourself, etc. It works in, like, either your free-to-play model where you could just play for XP and with one of the default skins and look like everybody else and play the game exactly like the pros play it, or you could get all these things to make you look different or dance differently, a different back bling and what have you. And those usually cost money, or they're the result of winning it through in-game like challenges. If you buy something called a Battle Pass, you're part of a 10-week challenge that's called the Season. And Fortnite has like really, really basic narrative pieces. There's not like a plot, but there is a narrative happening on the Fortnite island. So we're 8 weeks into the 10-week season. I started out having no idea what the hell it was. This weekend, I found myself watching esports as the PAX Fortnite tournament was going on and waiting with bated breath for the announcement of next week's limited time mode that's everybody's going to get like a cool skin that looks like a white John Wick suit with like a mask that has a card suit on it. and then we're all going to be able to play like a bank robbery mode to unlock different versions of these skins. There's also a cube on the map. It is big, it is purple, it is laying down runes on the map that makes gravity react in weird ways. But around everywhere from like an hour and 43 to like an hour and 39 minutes, it inches along the map, killing whatever is in its path. There's a whole bunch of things in this game that are like super weird, and they're all like seasonal. And I haven't been like part necessarily of a large game like that, like this, since back when Pokemon Go was happening. So it's been interesting. There are like two more weeks. I'm going to stay definitely committed to it before whether or not I come down on a like how much this is going to invade my normal life and how much it was just peeking into somebody else's pop culture. But if you guys want to check in on Fortnite, it's for free on every platform, including your phones, and some weird stuff's going on. Come die on the island with me.
So what you're saying is that this is Dave lives out Ready Player One.
There's a lot less trivia solving, but I have, you know, chosen my side in the mythology. I'm worshiping the tomato god, so I have my tomato suit with the king variant that I've, you know, earned, and then my praise the tomato emote that allows me to raise a tomato to the heavens in praise of my god. And I drop at the tomato temple when I can. So hopefully that has something to do with the next season's story. Otherwise, I've invested in the wrong god. But at least I've invested.
I should note that I've played Fortnite for what could be said was maybe 2 hours. I didn't know any of that shit.
Yeah, and with this new like mode coming up, it's like semi-team based, and usually I just random squad up. So maybe I'll throw my friend information in the Slack and see if any of you guys want to help me out in these next 2 weeks.
I feel like I would only disappoint you.
Yeah, it's hard to disappoint the tomato god. He's a pretty jolly dude.
I feel like even the tomato god would be like, no, this guy sucks at video games.
Well, school started, Neil, so have you tried it since school started?
No.
Okay, because all the 11-year-olds are in school. Yeah, yes, you should be playing earlier than 3 o'clock on a Wednesday. yeah, so I think that's going to be our storms for this week. But I think we're going to stick with a similar format as we move in to pew! Mailbagging.
Pew, pew, pew!
It's the mailbag, pew, pew, pew.
Pew, pew, mailbag, pew.
Remember when Dave was talking about the tomato god? He's like, maybe I've chosen the wrong god, but at least I've chosen one.
This makes me want to go play so much Fortnite.
Remember how that's a thing that Dave actually said with his mouth?
You guys just need to get into video game lore of massive multiplayer battle royale games.
I guess.
When was the last time you guys chose a god?
No wonder that when you were like...
You know, that's a fair point.
Okay, so Dave's answer to like the first question of this podcast, which is what summer food are you going to miss the most? Well, he said seasonal tomatoes. I'm wondering if Dave can find a way to answer every single one of these questions with with the word tomato somewhere. Just to prove his devotion to the one true god. The one true god. The tomato god. All right.
Oh, the cube's name is Kevin, too. So, in case you guys...
Kevin.
Kevin, yeah. But we're in a different segment now.
Like I said, so I played like 4 rounds. I died within like a minute every time. The game is... I'm having Halo PTSD flashbacks over here.
Yes, very similar. So, we're going to start off this mailbag with a part one segment that's going to be some superlatives, because they are the best.
Because, listen, if we don't do these, who will?
Exactly. So I want Neil to start off. We were trying to do best movie you saw this summer, but we each picked two. So best two movies you saw this summer.
I want it on record that I was not the one who cheated for the first time this time. You boys already had two down by the time I would fill it out.
I for sure cheated immediately. Okay. I wrote the prompt and then cheated. Anyway, so here's my two things, and these both also come with additional caveats. The first one, which was released at the end of April, which I count as summer, but also I live in Texas, so I could get there on pretty much any month except for like January.
You mean when it's chili up and you're making chili?
When I'm making chili.
Hey, Neil, is tomato one of the key ingredients of your mom's chili?
Yes, actually, it is. You want to get two cans of tomatoes. Yeah. I sense a theme. So my first pick did not have any tomatoes, but it did have a vagina flower.
Mm.
A large one.
Great.
That was also, I think, a dress. Anyway, it was Dirty Computer, the Janelle Monáe music video, short film, art installation thing that she did. It was 30 minutes of tying different music videos together, which I thought was brilliantly cinematic and interesting and controversial. And it was one of the few times this summer where it felt like we were having a shared cultural experience when that thing dropped and everybody was just like, you just go on Twitter. And we have a lot of shared cultural experiences nowadays, but like all of them are bad. Like, they're all bad news.
Well, except for Dirty Computer and the raccoon that climbed a tower.
Yeah, like, most of them are, like, bad news.
Yeah, everything else is
bad. Dirty Computer felt like a really interesting... And you know what? When you watch it all the way through, which I've done several times at this point, you really see sort of the larger narratives that she's playing with, and it's just great. It's one of the most... You know, it's like... It's like the debate last year where everybody's like, is Twin Peaks a movie? It's like, well, it's whatever you want it to be. I felt like Dirty Computer had that same feels like cinema quality. My other choice, also something I did not see during the summer for the first time. I saw it in March at South by Southwest. It is a movie called Support the Girls. And it is delightful. Was I supposed to do two there or just one?
You could do as many as you want. You could do them both.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, yeah, so Support the Girls is a movie that was shot not far from where I live. In fact, there's this sort of big critical scene at the end where I was like, that building's like right by my house.
Neil leaned over and he basically pulled a Sarah Palin and he was like, you could see my house from that building there.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was cool. It's great to see your neighborhood or the highway interchange near your neighborhood on film. But it's directed by Andrew Bujalski, who has made a couple films in town here in Austin, and he's an interesting-ish director. I don't know. His stuff's kind of hit or miss with me. Support the Girls is a huge hit. Regina Hall plays the manager of a like Hooters-style restaurant, and it's all about her interactions with the girls and her struggles in her personal life, and just sort of it's one of those One Crazy Day dramedies where it's just like everything's happening to her all at once. Hayley Lou Richardson is in it. She's great. The entire cast, lots of both fun and some real emotion, and it is currently in theaters, so that's why I wanted to put it here, because it feels like I saw it last year or maybe 20 years ago, depending on how time has shifted in our current world. So you know, go see Support the Girls. It's good. It's not a movie about Hooters, which is what I thought it was.
Or bras.
Right. Like,
oh, I get it. Like the girls or the boobs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like those big chest tomatoes.
Yeah, no, it's about like real stuff.
I wasn't going to let Joanna go next, but I'm going to take advantage of this pause to say that I'm going to ride Neil's Tessa Thompson train all the way to remind you to Sorry to Bother You, the movie by Boots Riley ended up being like a absurdist black comedy about socialism and horse people. I'm allowed to say it's about horse people, right?
Spoiler alert.
I feel like, yeah. I think it's that's in the trailer a little bit.
Okay, good. That not only is in the trailer a little bit, we were not supposed to spoil like the ending of this movie that says Boots Riley, the director, on Twitter. But that being said, sorry to bother you, still in theaters, had a little trouble getting international distribution, possibly because that's a super American movie about capitalism. But we're gonna see if it has like some legs, hopefully under whatever the cult ground is, now in the internet age. Back, you know, in my teenage years, you just have movies that somebody would give you on like VHS or a burned CDR copy of, and that's how you discover it. I'm hoping.
Sadly, I think that's just torrenting.
Okay, well, somebody buy some disc copies of Sorry to Bother You to forcibly give to people, because I think it's not only an interesting movie, but I think it's the movie that successfully says the most this summer. I think I compared it like directly to Black Klansman only because the week that I did it on Fighting in the War Room was the same week that Boots Riley tweeted his sort of critique of Spike Lee's Black Klansman. But I really do think that of the two message movies, Sorry to Bother You might be the more uncomfortable truth to hear, but is the more important truth to hear. So that's why that is definitely one of the best movies I saw this year. The other one is going to go to Bo Burnham's Eighth Grade, which was delightful. I have this problem when I'm seeing indie films that focus on children, and especially when I'm seeing films that I've heard very vague things about the plot, is that I'm always waiting for some like horrible shoe to drop. I'm always waiting for every indie film to become From Dusk Till Dawn and just be like, boo, fuck you, vampires! Or like the dramatic version of that where like there's suddenly a sexual assault and then the movie becomes about how like sexual assaults happen and, you know, nobody says anything. So I was very happy to see Eighth Grade go to some uncomfortable places, but stay rooted in its truth and never necessarily take a hard turn into like that indie shock value for shock value's sake. Because of that, I think it's super earnest, and that earnestness bleeds off the screen, and at least for me, into my heart, my tomato heart.
Oh, I see, like those giant chest tomatoes. I just don't want anyone to forget that those are things that you said at one point. All right. I'm here to talk about a movie starring Tomato Cruise, Mission Impossible Fallout. Sorry, it was like the worst joke of my entire life. Did you know that Tom is over Tomato Cruise? Now you do. Mission Impossible Fallout, like, I would have enjoyed it regardless, but I will say, and this is not just like some sort of shameless bid to get more people in our Patreon, but like, watching all of the movies leading up to it along with our Patreon subscribers in our Slack group as we did. So I watched Mission Impossible 1, the good one. Mission Impossible 2, the really bad one. Mission Impossible 3, the, you know, fine one. And then 4 and 5, the great ones, all like with our listeners. And that like got me so amped. By the time I saw Mission Impossible Fallout in the theaters, I was like, I had the best fucking time of my life. I loved that movie. It was so fun. It was just like, what you want, what I want from a summer blockbuster. I was thrilled. I was chilled. I just loved it. And like, I don't have like a really good thoughtful one. Like I also really enjoyed Support the Girls. I also really enjoyed Sorry to Bother You. I also enjoyed Eighth Grade, but my other summer flick that I loved was Mamma Mia 2, which is once again, just like a very enjoyable time in the movie. So both of those are like just, you know, broadly appealing mass entertainment vehicles. Well done, I think. Very well done. And not like mindless, but at the same time, like, yeah, not like deep and thought provoking. So if you're looking for a thoughtful answer, look to the bros. But if you want the dum-dum, I had a fun time at the movies this summer answer, that's me, Mission Impossible Fallout, Mamma Mia 2.
I like how we've subverted expectations with this segment.
Here we go again.
All right, moving on then. There's, of course, a smaller screen that we all obsessively watch. It's the television show or the streaming screen. I walked into this trap. I spent a lot of time last night watching, rewatching old Siskel and Ebert like clips.
Yeah.
Which was like really great and I really enjoyed it, but I'm worried I now have like all these anachronistic comebacks in my head. And, like, you know, should have left that on the cutting room floor. But like, doesn't make sense.
Would you say we worship the small screen?
Would I say that we worship the small screen?
Yeah.
Like some sort of tomato god?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, right. But only the smallest screens. The phones. We live to serve the phones.
We could play Fortnite on those phones. It's the best new show you watch this summer. Let's start with Joanna.
Okay, so I guess maybe I got all my like darkness, grit and depth from TV this summer.
I like how you're just Lego Batman now.
Yeah, darkness, no parents. And I almost said no parents, but of course, having at least a parent is a very important part of this show, which is called Sharp Objects on HBO. And once again, not to make everything about our Patreon Slack, but I read the book with our Patreon subscribers, and that already got me like super into the show. And then I did a podcast about it, and that got me doubly into it. And so I was just like living this harrowing tale of like murder and self abuse and abuse, child abuse and all this sort of stuff and bad mothers and damaged daughters and in the South. But I think it's one of the finest, like, you know, acting, directing, production design, et cetera, achievements I saw this summer. So yeah, Sharp Objects. I thought it was incredible. I really, really enjoyed the experience of watching it with many of you.
How many episodes did you binge versus how many episodes have you watched sequentially?
That's a great question. I only binged, as in watched more than one, two at the end. Otherwise, I did week to week.
Oh, nice. Yeah, because I was editing along with your Still Watching podcast, but declined the screeners early on because of time reasons. And then once the show got started, I'm like, I don't want to live in this world for longer than an hour. I think it would have been really oppressive to take all eight hours at once. Maybe that would have made like the spiral out at the end so much better. But for my mental sanity, I did it 1 week at a time.
I did 1 week at a time just because, like, oftentimes when I'm podcasting shows, I don't like to get ahead because I don't like, I don't know, I just like to be with the viewers. But I watched these episodes like three or four times. So I am living in that world for like 4 hours at a time. It's just the same episode over and over and over again. But yeah, when I got to the finale, I had the screener for the finale. And so I watched it immediately after I watched the second to last just because I was like, I want to know. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it does kind of ramp up. At least with your questions towards the end. And
right.
That last episode is real sweaty. My reaction and on screen for sometimes. All right.
I think I'm going to binge that whole show this weekend.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you'll see what Neil comes out on the other side.
One straight shot.
Sweat
that Band-Aid.
Half Sharp Objects, half PlayStation Spider-Man.
You'll be sweating like a tomato. They sweat, don't they?
The reason I wanted to ask about that binging question is because my show is going to be Castle Rock on Hulu, Stephen King thing, which we talked about. And I got screeners and have been only binging this show except for the penultimate episode, which airs
this week,
mm-hmm. and the next week's finale, which they withheld from me until a week before. But it's been interesting. I swallowed it all up, really enjoyed binging it, and watching people react to it week to week online have thought that maybe that was a good decision, because it seems like things that I was able to write off. I think Castle Rock is also a bad robot production, and I think as the show goes on, it leans more into being a J.J. Abrams bad robot type of show than necessarily a Stephen King show, which means that all these like dangling threads, some get wrapped up and some get discarded. And I could see how if you've been watching Castle Rock week to week, we're right at a frustrating point in the story where it seems like things are just starting to happen, and maybe we, you know, were sent down some blind alleys the week before. But I have to say, as somebody who's been taking it in gulps, I have not noticed that pacing problem. I really enjoy Castle Rock for its sort of King aping style of stories nested inside stories with like an arch thing following it through. We'll see, you know, if the finale takes the turn that I think it will, and if that is disappointing to me or not, but it's at least captured my interest to that level, which makes it the best new show I watched this summer.
I also watched Castle Rock in like two chunks, like three or four episodes at a time. And then like these last few episodes, they're sort of parceling out to us. And I agree with you. I don't know if it's the pacing, but it's also, there's just like a lot of minutiae that I think would be hard for me to hold in my head week to week that really benefit from a binge watch. So yeah, that is a show that like, if you haven't been watching along week to week, I would recommend when it's all said and done for you to watch it sort of in a little rush. I think that will help it. Yeah, because I've heard from some people that they're not enjoying it as much as maybe Dave and I were enjoying it. So,
yeah, the key is just to get screeners. Can't be that hard, right?
Or you know, maybe wait until it's
done. I'm just gonna wait
till the end.
Yeah, and then you don't have like tweets and posts on the internet where that people could always be like, "Remember when you were wrong about where the Soul Stone was, Dave, for the rest of your life?" Yeah, waiting to the end of things is definitely a good way to go. Neil, what's your favorite new show you watched this summer?
Another show that I can only watch. Seemingly, this one's tough because people in my house can only take one episode at a time of this show. And it's Sacha Baron Cohen's Who is America? It's the show that got me to resubscribe to Showtime after years of not even knowing what the hell's on Showtime. So Who is America, as you know, is his follow-up, I guess, to the universe of Ali G. And it involves Sacha Baron Cohen taking on personalities that are stereotypes of different Americans and types of people. Like, one of them's like an Israeli, like, guy who's like super into guns, and so it's like someone that like a portion of America would take very seriously, it's amazing. And I think that we live in a political time that's hard to make fun of because it's so crazy already. Like, the joke is that we're living in this, and it's a cruel joke, and it's being played on all of us. But What fascinates me is, one, how Sacha Baron Cohen is so amazing at holding it together when he's doing stuff like this. Like, I'm sure one of the ones that you guys know about is The Art Dealer. Like, have you guys watched the show at all?
No.
I've seen clips, but not entirely, no.
Okay. Have you heard of the art dealer scene where he goes into this art gallery in Santa Monica and he basically tells this story about being like an ex-convict and how he started making art when he was in the slammer, and his art is poop.
And doesn't he get the art director to like donate some of her pubes or something?
Yes. Yeah. So not only does he get her to say that like she loves the art that is made from his poop, he also gets her to wait while he's creating more art with poop in the bathroom. And then later, when he tells her that he has a toothbrush with the pubic hair of famous artists on it, she donates some of her own. It's crazy town. And it's really hard to watch, but always impressed with Sacha Baron Cohen's, ability to not just fucking lose it, because who wouldn't? And really, I'm struck by how many people he got. I'm struck by how people can be sitting there next to a guy who's clearly in like 8 pounds of makeup and be like, "Oh no, this is a real thing." And that's everybody. Like, that's, you know, Roy Moore, that crazy guy from Alabama, all the way over to Bernie Sanders, too. They lead the show. The first episode is like him talking to Bernie Sanders. And it's wild to me. And I don't know what that says about our culture like that people can be duped like that. Or what does it say about Sacha Baron Cohen? Maybe he's just so good. Because I don't know if I don't know if anyone else could do this. So
well, I haven't watched it in its entirety because it is, you know, uncomfortable and infuriating, and it's something I do want to come back to because this is not only a Sacha Baron Cohen project, but he has Nathan Fielder on as a writer for this season or for this show.
I didn't know that, but I can see it.
That's like the first time I've wanted to watch this show.
So it's like, okay. It's definitely some of the Sacha Baron Cohen, like, you know, the poop things that you described, but then he's able to, like, I think, do these characters in like a post Borat Ali G world because there is some of the finessing of Nathan for you on it, or at least that's all the clips that I've seen are like this. I mean, I'm assuming he's just surrounding himself with the absolute best people in this particular art form because it's consistently elevated to that point. And then apparently there was a whole bunch that he shot that didn't even like make this show because whatever his standard of what the quality of Who Is America is was higher than some of the pranks he pulled. So that's, super curious, but yeah, it's uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, and I would imagine, and I hope you report back after you watch it, tough one to binge. but I think I could I could keep watching it, because I, like, that whole shtick makes me laugh very hard, and I, for some reason, don't feel as uncomfortable as others. But, like, we had our little dumpling party a couple weeks back, and we watched, I got the entire house to watch one. And
then everybody yelled at each other for 2 hours.
Well, no, and it was just like, people just like, I can't watch this anymore. Like, I can't do it. Which is amazing to me that is, it's still possible to make that kind of content. So yeah, minus Who Is America, give it a try. Get a 14-day free trial of Showtime and just knock it all out.
I'm glad that art form still exists, because back in my day, we thought Tom Green was the nadir of such a thing. And boy, it's gone both higher and lower from Tom Green since then. Good to see reality still ridiculous.
Yeah, well, and I think also there's, in my mind, there's a lot of comedy out there that we don't really need these days. And this is one that feels pretty essential to our moment.
To the moment. Well, we're going to talk about things that actually is not new this summer, but something that we rediscovered this summer. Summer is a time for rediscovery. I almost did the Sherlock Holmes books because I've been revisiting different Sherlock Holmes things after telling a story on Fighting in the War Room about how it was one of the first books that I read and one of the, like, Sherlock or the detective archetypes stuck with me throughout all media. But the thing that I've really rediscovered, in the sense that I went back and looked at my podcast app and realized I had dozens of episodes that I had missed and decided I was going to catch up on Karina Longworth's You Must Remember This podcast about the history of old Hollywood. I specifically went back to do her Dead Blondes series, and now she's in the middle of her Hollywood Babylon series, which is about correcting, like, old gossip of the day, which is revisiting all these salacious scandals from poisonings to affairs to false drug addictions, and what those were covering up. It has been an amazing summer for me listening to these old Hollywood stories. Driving around, walking around, spending some quality podcast time. And I'm super happy that she has a book coming out pretty soon. It's called Seduction, Sex, Lies, and Stardom in Howard Hughes' Hollywood. So I'm going to get to do a Karina
Longworth
book.
So much alliteration in that title.
I know. So we're going to get a Karina Longworth book in November. I'm all caught up with You Must Remember This. And if you have no idea where to start, I would say where you want is really a good place to get a taste for it. You're going to end up revisiting these in chunks if you're anything like me. Especially, I think my favorite was that she did a whole series on Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff and how their careers sort of intersected. That went through some crazy high points in Hollywood horror history. So, yeah, check it out. you must remember this. It's a podcast.
My favorite Karina, you must remember this series, the one that got me into it, and I think Dave is the one who probably recommended it to me in the first place, which is the Charles Manson series, which I... Yeah. It's like Manson and Hollywood, which I really recommend you revisit before whenever the Tarantino movie comes out in like 2 years from now. It's between
or
now,
Mindhunter season two.
Or Mindhunter season two. Damon Harriman playing Charles Manson for both of those projects. And also I was reading Karina's book on a beach this weekend. And here's my favorite thing about Karina's book, which is that, she's got like a cast of characters at the beginning, you know? And so basically it's like Howard, you know, it's like, it gives a person's name, like Howard Hughes, and then some, you know, interesting factoids about them. And so it's like Howard Hughes. This lady he fucked. This lady he fucked. This lady he fucked. This lady he fucked. Like, that's the whole front part of the book is just like, here's all the ladies that Howard Hughes fucked and why they're important. And, yeah, book is great. You're going to enjoy it. All right. So my thing, is what did I decide to say? Oh, I went with, because I was watching Castle Rock, because we did our Stephen King episode, it had me revisiting a bunch of Stephen King properties. And it just a reminder for me that, like, I think some people think of Stephen King as like a Halloween sort of, but like, I love Stephen King in the summer, if I'm being honest with you. And like, that's not, you know, a huge surprise. Like, Stand By Me is kind of a summery movie and stuff like that. And the first season of Stranger Things premiered in the summer, and I really loved that feeling of like discovering Stranger Things, and it was all hot outside and stuff like that. So like the classic John Carpenter, Stephen King, that kind of horror, like, really pairs well with, like, the idea of summer camp or, you know, campfires or whatever it is. So, I don't know. That was something that I was swimming in a bit this summer. So Stephen King, when it's hot outside. Neil?
Wait, so we're not going to talk about this picture that is in our notes?
I was assuming somebody, whoever put it in there, was going to bring it up. But there's, like, a swimming iguana.
Because it is haunting.
Yeah, it's like 1998 Godzilla style swimming iguana.
I put it in there to scare Dave. It didn't work. I was hoping Dave would go, but he didn't.
Just like, underwater iguana.
Yeah. It's like a dinosaur underwater, but it's an iguana.
It's no? It's a lot for me right now.
It's because I knew it was iguana. If there was like a little submarine to make it look giant, I might have been like, what the fuck is this?
I think it's still pretty big though, don't you think?
Okay. If I was underwater and that thing was swimming toward me, I'd freak the fuck out. So yeah. Yes.
Alright.
Fair. But Neil, outside of swimming iguanas, what's something you'd rediscovered this summer?
I had to compose myself. I scrolled all the way past it now, so it's no longer staring at me. But the thing that I regained this summer, and most of it's thanks to MoviePass, at least at the beginning, is my appreciation for seeing movies in theaters. I've seen more movies in theaters this year than I have in the last couple. And, you know, just like, I don't know, the last couple of years have been weird. And then, you know, last year we had with Fantastic Fest and all the related dramas, and it sort of, I don't know, I won't say that I like ignored going to the Alamo Drafthouse as some like statement, but it just sort of sapped my energy for it. But this summer when I signed up for the Movie Pass, the formerly known as Movie Pass, I really started going to the movies more, just random, you know, random afternoons, just going and seeing what's out there. And I think also it's just really great to go somewhere for 2 hours and exist outside of real life, which I think is great. I've come to, it's a Zen thing that I like about it. And I did see some under the sea creatures in the Meg. So it worked out pretty well.
Good old theaters. I've been going to theater more too. I'm gonna try to up it even more in the fall, even though it's like maybe that chilly thing isn't working out. But
well, this is something that we talked about over on the podcast I do about award season, Little Gold Men. We were talking about how I felt like, just sort of anecdotally, more people were going to smaller films this summer, like people talking about Sorry to Bother You or Eighth Grade or the Mr. Rogers documentary or the RBG documentary, like all this stuff. And Richard brought up Richard Lawson brought up on that podcast. He was like, yeah, I think that's a result of MoviePass. And it had not even fucking occurred to me, which I feel like really dumb about, that those two things were linked. And then all of a sudden, like, we're about to talk about MoviePass a little bit more later on this podcast, but like all of a sudden I know I have privilege because, like, I can go to press screenings if I want to. I make a fairly good living, so going to the movies is not, like, a financial burden on me. And so, like, but I was not fully understanding what MoviePass meant, not just to, like, so that people could go see the big blockbusters they like to see for cheap, but so that they felt like they could go see the smaller movies that they really were curious about in theaters for cheap or for a reasonable price. And, yeah, that just hadn't occurred to me, and I felt really dumb. And so for that, you know, I am like bummed about the state of MoviePass, because what a good you know, result from MoviePass that people were seeing these smaller films.
Right, and I think what's interesting, I'm in the midst of working on an op-ed about MoviePass, which we'll talk about more later. But the idea that our behavior around, like, how we go to the movies has changed. And even though MoviePass is obviously, like, sinking like the Titanic very quickly, it's shown the right kind of companies, the companies that could pull it off, that this is how people are going to want to go to the movies. And it's the same shift we've gone through with streaming and the way the music industry changed. There's like a consumer entitlement's like a terribly tainted word, but it's sort of like you sort of expect that this is how we can subscribe somewhere, we can go see more movies. Because, and I can't remember if it was Matt Singer or David Ehrlich who wrote this, and in which one of their countless things that have been written about MoviePass. But one of them put it very plainly, which I agree with, which MoviePass reminded us that people like going to the movies. And so there you go. Like, if you can make it cheaper for people to go to the movies, they'll go see more movies. So I agree with what you're saying. That's where it's going.
Speaking of op-eds about MoviePass, our next segment is called The Worst Pop Culture Thing of the Summer, and Neil has picked op-eds about MoviePass, despite the fact that he's writing one.
Yeah, great transition. Honestly, it's funny. I am writing a piece about MoviePass, but it's about what happens after MoviePass. So, I'm ready for it to die. I'm ready for it to be over as a cultural thing. Like, we had some good times, then we had some weird times, and now we continue to have the same conversation over and over again about it. So I'm ready for MoviePass to go away so that we can write other content. Like, as a people, we can write other content.
As a people.
Yeah.
As a people, we get back to our roots of entertainment content, not about MoviePass.
Right. It's funny. It's just like there's, you know, you get yourself into different silos, cultural silos, and mine are like political media silo and film Twitter and then NBA Twitter. And all three have this propensity for, if there is a horse that is dead, but it can be beaten further. All three of those different pop culture silos that I exist in are very willing to take up that challenge. So I'm ready for MoviePass to go away so that we can pick a new topic.
Interesting. Speaking of people and if they should stay away, Joanna, what's the worst pop culture thing of the summer?
Bad Men coming back already. And people.
This is such a good one.
And people making excuses for them. So, you know, like, I don't know if you saw, listeners, that, you know, some, like, not anyone, like, worth paying attention to, really, but some dude was wearing, like, a Harvey Weinstein is innocent t-shirt on the Venice red carpet, and there were, like, a bunch of chuckle fucks posing around him, pointing at his shirt and stuff like that. It's like, fuck you. You know, Louis C.K. performing a fucking surprise stand-up at the Comedy Cellar. Aziz doing a Aziz, it's like a spectrum, obviously. Like, I don't ever want to lump Aziz exactly in with everything else, but, like, you know, Aziz and Sari, or, like, Matt Lauer saying, don't worry, I'll be back on television soon. Like, it seemed like it happened all at once, where I'm just like, no. I don't... No, you don't get to come back yet. Or the way you're coming back is not, what sucks about the court of public opinion and not like, you know, doing this through like due process is there is no like actual definition of when you get to come back. And like, do I get to say when you come back? I don't know. Who the fuck am I? That being said, like, of all the things, the Louis C.K. thing was really extremely egregious to me. The way in which, like, it was, you know, he just walked in, said he wanted to do a set, was allowed to do a set. The people who, you know, were there were not given advance warning that, like, Louis fucking C.K. was going to be there. And then the, like, just the, like, cowardly shitheads who came to his defense and just be like, oh, you know, Louis C.K., you know, like, deserves a chance. And like, okay, I need you to really think about what Louis C.K. did for as long as he did and the fucking cover-up that went, came around what he did. And just acknowledge that it has not even been a year since this story first broke. And I'm pretty angry about it. So there you go. Bad men coming back. Worst thing of the summer.
I have a thought about this. I am also very I was very disappointed in the Louis C.K. thing. Like I really, really bad. I think it's worth reminding that like some of these people, like Harvey Weinstein and probably Matt Lauer, based on the stories that came out about him, they should probably go to jail. So, they don't get to get comebacks because they should go to jail. And then the other guys, I don't know. I probably like 10 years ago would have been one of those dickheads who would have defended my idols or whatever. But now I'm just like, I don't need those people. They don't need to come back ever. And that's fine.
I also feel like they don't need to come back ever, but like the idea of like there needs to be a road back for them. And I'm like, maybe I'm willing to have that conversation in a while, but like I just am not ready to have that conversation right now. And the lack of concern, and like, you know, obviously the most disappointing person advocating for Louis C.K. is Michael Ian Black. That was like a really distressing like sort of thing, because I think of Michael Ian Black as a very thoughtful and progressive comedian, and him just sort of like leaping, you know, and he said as much, you know, when he started tweeting, he's like, I might get a lot of heat for this, but, and then just like double down and double down and double down. And it's like, I don't like, you know, canceling people. I don't like that concept, but I really need all of us to think about all the women whose lives and careers were derailed forever because of the action of these men. And that needs to be the thought for a little while longer, not, oh, poor Louis C.K., how will he ever come back from this? It's, oh, the women who Louis C.K. menaced and harassed and chased out of their chosen career path. That's like where I think we should still be focusing our thought mm-hmm. and energy. So
right. And it's not to say there isn't the possibility of a road back, but that road it should be long and very hard and have some emotional introspection and learning. And you don't just get to come back to where you were, because yeah. you don't just get to go, like Matt Lauer doesn't get to go back to hosting the Today Show. Like maybe let's start from out, you know, let's do some good works. We've talked about this before. Anyway, yeah, I feel like yours was worse than mine, because mine was just about MoviePass.
My worst pop culture thing of the summer is James Gunn got fired off of Guardians of the Galaxy 3, and it's not going to be reversed. And we could talk about maybe why it happened, and you know, that maybe there was not as many hands on the wheel as we maybe think there are, as will be financially affected by it. But the reality is, randomly on Twitter, right-wing nuts can bring up anything you said in their own context, and Disney will be like, that's credible enough to lose $1 billion over. That's the reality now, and that's the stance of the company that is absorbing Fox. And Fox is not necessarily known for being full of progressive executives. Dark Shadows on the Horizon, worst pop culture thing of the summer for me. I don't want to. I feel bad going after Joanna with that one. And I'm definitely not. I'm not saying that he should come back or anything like that. But I'm saying the fact that it did happen and that it is Guardians of the Galaxy 3 of the MCU of the summer in between, the summer of the snap, if you will. It's bad business.
Snapped away all Disney's good decision making.
Well, then I like Dave Bautista saying some weird things about maybe not coming back for Guardians 3. Guardians 3 is on hold. Bautista also said maybe that changes Avengers 4, but he's not reshooting anything. Avengers 4 is being reshot right now. It all just looks bad. And they were looking so good until this randomly happened.
Right. And I think it gets at a more complex issue, I think, which is especially as like it's not a good look for the company to be bowing to pressure, although we do enjoy the fact that the freedom of speech allows people to assemble and protest and even speak with their dollars, and that's good. Sometimes that changes corporate behavior for the best. And but I think the difference here, the dangerous precedent Disney set, is that they took what is really a relatively small protest that was made in bad faith, and they used it as an. I don't know why they fired James Gunn. Like deep, when you like, if you strip away the controversy, I don't understand what they accomplished by firing James Gunn, because they just look like idiots at this point. So, was there an underlying thing? You know, you always wonder, like, is he secretly like a murderer or something? I'm not sure.
you heard so it here first on Storm of Spoilers. James,
no,
Gunn,
I don't mean that.
Murder.
As cited on the Storm of Spoilers podcast.
No, but it's
you
like,
must remember this. Investigate.
It's like the dangerous precedent is being pushed around by a small movement of dickweeds. Because now they're going to expect that they can do that whenever they want just because they don't like someone. And you're supposed to be Disney. You're especially under the Marvel Studios brand. You're supposed to be smarter than that. And you're supposed to be the company that is like, well, no, we knew what we were getting with James Gunn. And we understand that those jokes aren't funny and they were a little tasteless, but they also are just jokes. And he did apologize for them. And we're going to continue making movies with him because he's a good filmmaker and his cast really loves him. And this would be a PR disaster if we were to say, just fire him. So that's where they're at.
PR disaster. Can't imagine there's not money being left on the table. But them's the breaks for the worst pop culture thing of 2018.
Damn, dark way to end.
All right, now is the time on the Storm of Spoilers episode where we thank the members of the Small Council in our Patreon. These subscribers help make the show possible. So we want to thank David Adams, Sam Adolfo, Annie A.K., Rachel Aluni, Ryan Allwood, Tanya Andren Schrum, Mariana Ardito Cuoto, Derek Bachman, Bronwyn Beck, Michael Belitsky, Liz Bistleen. I feel like Liz gave you pronunciation correction, Dave, and I didn't remember it. Liz, tell me what I did wrong. Randy Blash, Nathan Bodnar, Billy Bosky, and Stephen Boyd. Thank you guys so much.
And I want to thank Daniel Boltema, Julie C. Bailey, Jen Calhoun, Amy Calhoun, Matt Campbell, Sarah Carmichael, Ellen Chen, Timothy Clayton, Dan Clayland, Sam Cohen, James Cooper, Jose Cordova, Eleanor Corkish, Sean Cosme, and David Cox.
Nice. Hey, guess what? I have some names to say as well. I'm going to start with Maggie Craddock, Nathan Critchfield, Kari D. King, Robert D. Rapace, Luann DeMello, Kurt Daniel Klein, Patricia DeLaunay, Debbie DeNice, Josh Dillard, Katie Dilligan, Derek Dock, Cody Drygeese, Ruby Durham, Philip Durrett, and Sarah Ellis.
And as always, thank you to the great tomato god.
We're back for our second mailbag segment. We've solicited questions from you, the listeners. We got some. We chose our favorites. Who wants to pose a question to us?
Okay, yeah.
Oh, it sounds like Joanna. All right, good.
This is a hot take. This is from Maddie, who's someone we know from Con of Thrones. And Maddie writes, I'm very pissed about Henry Cavill's Witcher casting. If y'all care about this, I would love your opinions. I have zero opinions about this. Dave, do you have opinions about this?
No, I actually kind of like it. My experience with Witcher is not from the books or not from the games, but from watching other people play the game, in which case I probably got like zero actual character. So I would say I'm into it just because I've seen like some Photoshops of it, and it looks cool, and Henry Cavill seems like he can do that sort of thing. And I want to know when the Gwent spinoff is, because Gwent is a card game inside Witcher that they spin off because it's a super fun card game. Guys, can we talk about Gwent?
Nope. Neil, wow. What are your thoughts about the Witcher casting?
You know, more Henry Cavill, I guess, is good. I don't entirely know why Maddie's pissed, but I'm happy to receive that information later. I'm disappointed that Henry Cavill's not doing a Terminator movie as the Terminator after seeing him in Mission Impossible Fallout. I did find out that The Witcher is based on books.
I know. I thought I only knew it as a video game.
I thought it was a video game.
Yeah.
And so I anticipate doing it for the Patreon book club. So.
Yeah, let's read a Witcher book, maybe. Who knows? All right. Yeah, if you want to see a fun Photoshop of Henry Cavill in The Witcher, snowy beard, you can go to his Instagram. He posted one of those Photoshops over there. It looks really cool. But Maddie, if you want to tell us elsewhere why you're upset, I'd be happy to learn. This one's from Karen. I think it's a really interesting thought exercise and sort of like a little teaser of what's going to come in our Let's Get Weird bonus episode we're doing this week. Kara asked, who is your fantasy guest host? As in, if one of us were to win the lottery and noped out of hosting, which seems unrealistic because even if you were rich, you seem to have so much fun. Who would you want to step in to fill their shoes / Mike? So let's start with Neil. If either Dave or I were to leave because we are too rich to podcast, who would you replace us with?
Hold on. There we go. I was looking up the name because I didn't want to get the name wrong, but it's Nicole Byer, who is on the Netflix Cake Fails show. Because she rules. Yeah. So
yeah, Nicole has her own podcast. It's called Why Won't You Date Me, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's because you guys would have to obviously replace the funny one, which is me. So you would need someone who's super funny.
Yes, we need a new funny one.
Oh, we're finding our own replacement?
Yeah.
Aren't we? That's how you posed the question.
Oh.
Isn't that what the question was?
I thought the question was like, if, I'm sitting here, Joanna, and Neil gets too rich, who would I replace Neil with?
I had to think about this question a lot, because I don't think any of us assumes that if we got rich, we would stop doing the podcast. It's a tough one.
Nicole Byer's podcast is Why Won't You Date Me. The first time I ever heard of Nicole Byer, though, was on an episode of How Did This Get Made? She was fucking hilarious on that episode.
Yeah, so I guess she's my answer for
all three of us?
Yeah, like if any of us had to leave, she would be the answer.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Dave?
Well, I mean... if we replace Dave, though, we'd have to get, like, a producer.
Yeah, you have to figure out, like, a knowledge gap. Or another draw. You guys could pivot. So, like, I would say if I went, you guys could replace me with Eric Malinsky of the Imaginary Worlds podcast pretty easily. I think I've talked about that before. It's just a way of trying to get him to acknowledge that he's listened to one of these shows. Eric, your D&D extension episode was really great. Your character sounds fantastic. But if one of you were to sadly go and I had to, you know, choose someone who I would want to hear literally anything they said about pop culture, Neil would be replaced by Edward James Olmos and Joanna would be replaced by Kathleen Turner.
Oh, and it that's would just amazing.
Be, you just want,
Dave,
like, a good,
Dave would be like,
a good
listen,
voice
listen to what's happening in Fortnite. And Kathleen Turner would be like, ah, ha, ha. I bet you never got laid.
Wow. I'm just really disappointed now that I'm not Kathleen Turner at all times.
It would be called Why Aren't You My Grandparents with Dave Gonzalez, starring Kathleen Turner and Edward James Olmos. Star Wars spoilers.
I like that we all fucked up this question, but in the most on-brand way possible.
If I were to replace either of you or myself, actually, I think my answer is the same for all three. Which is, I would go with Katie Rich, in all three slots. I do have a weekly podcast with Katie Rich. I was about to say, I've always wanted to have a weekly podcast with Katie Rich. I guess I already do, but like, there's so many of us on there and we're all sort of like here and there and everywhere on Little Gold Men that I don't feel like I get to like talk to Katie about everything the way that I want to, all the time. And then like, you know, so I think she'd be like a really solid replacement for me. And then if one of you guys were gone, I don't know. Like, I've also don't feel like I often find myself on like female majority podcasts. So I wouldn't mind having like two women and a dude. Though I guess that's also what Little Gold Men often is these days because Mike isn't around. So it's Richard and Katie and Joanna. So anyway, this is a long story short, way of saying, hey, listen to Little Gold Men. So it's a great show.
Yeah.
Katie Rich.
You could do Katie Rich and Edward James Olmos.
Yeah.
You know, I think that I have a funny Katie Rich story. I am when I think back about like the early days of like movie bloggers, Katie Rich was one of the first people that I actually just like started reading all of her stuff because it was her when she wrote for Cinema Blend. And that's how long I've known about Katie Rich.
Yeah. Gotta stick with the ones
It's like how I've been reading Joanna since Pajiba.
It's so true. Yeah. Neil is the first person, I know I've said this before, Neil is the first person that I can remember to ever share a link to something I wrote on like their website. So Neil used to do a roundup, like a link roundup, and you linked out to something I wrote on Pajiba. It was the first time that had ever happened to me, and I will never forget it. So
nice.
This last one, I'm going to do one more question. Like, you know, we're running a little long. We still have a bonus podcast to record. So this last question is just a music question. We don't talk about music that much on the show. It's from Matty, not Maddie, in the Slack. And Matty in the Slack says, music can be as powerful as film or TV. I hold my heart in my hand whenever I see Death Cab for Cutie stars in the Decemberists Live. What musicians/bands do you enjoy and why do you connect with them? And I have just been talking about this over the Labor Day weekend, in a couple different conversations with people. The subject of like my musical taste came up, and I was like, I have a really hard time nailing down what it is I like because I sort of wind up defying like genre, and I wind up listening to a lot of playlists, not a lot of albums anymore, stuff like that. But there was this, I just want to talk really briefly. I think I finally nailed down the name of the genre of the music that I enjoyed the most. When I got out of college and first moved to the city, and I was living in my first like adult apartment in San Francisco, and I listened to pretty much only Kings of Convenience, Belle and Sebastian, and Bright Eyes. And a friend of the podcast, a lawyer named Clint, who works in San Francisco, said something like, sad, bad bastard music is something like he kind of came up with for that. Or like, you know, we know what sad bastard music is. That's like the national, which is like too sad bastard for me. So I want to qualify sad bastard music and say, I like sad bastard music that like sometimes bops. So like sad bastard music that bops, is kind of my genre of choice. So I was just wondering if you, this is just like probably an open invitation to you, Neil or Dave, to say anything about your musical taste, one band, a wider genre, whatever it is, something, that speaks to you.
I'm going to say wide because I've had lots of favorites and listen to lots of different types of weird music. But what I did notice about myself once somebody pointed it out to me was my favorite genre of music is single dude working shit out. So from your Todd Rundgren's to your Nine Inch Nails to your, you know, like Watsky's, early Watsky, now he's working with like lots of different producers, like a single dude, usually white, I think. Everybody's actually, no, there's a couple. Anyway, the important thing, it's a guy who's like, I'm gonna get through my shit in an album. and he makes that album, I'm almost universally into those albums. Even like your AWOL Nations, I guess. Which is weird, and I don't think it's really a genre, and that, you know, could take on lots of different types of music, but it's definitely that weird obsessive thing that I feel like's in my mind. If I could hear that in somebody else's music, it draws me in.
Nice.
Neil.
This is a tough one, because I don't ever claim to have any taste in music, but I do like to listen to music. I'm the kind of person who just rolls through the Apple Music like moods playlists, where it's like, what mood are you in? And you hit it, and it just gives you like 30 songs. So I'm that guy. What I will say is that my history and interactions with musicians and going to like concerts and stuff is very off-brand for me. Like, my family, when I was young, went through a very big country phase. So the first concert I remember going to was Alan Jackson.
Wow.
The Chattahoochee tour.
Wow.
And opening for Alan Jackson was Faith Hill. Amazing. Who was just a nobody at that point. So, like, stuff like that. Like, the first concert I ever remember going to, like, in middle school with, like, a group of friends and, like, girls, was OAR of a Revolution.
Oh, my gosh. Uh-huh.
Right. And then, you know, like, the thing I did with my friends in high school was I saw Dave Matthews, like, 4 times. And then, like, as I got into my early 20s, I listened to a lot of stuff that, you know, if you looked at it on paper, would be like, this is a troubled young white man. It's like a lot of Linkin Park, I guess. I don't know. But at a certain point, I was just like, I have shit taste in music. I'm just not going to listen to music. So nowadays, though, I feel like my palate is more refined.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, I always used to thought I had, like, shit taste in music, and then I, like, went to college and took, like, a writing about music class to, like, get into criticism and, like, try to figure out what I wasn't getting about music. And then then someone was like, Dave has really good taste in music, and then I was like, oh, it's all bullshit. You have great taste in music, Neil. Share your taste in music with
well,
me.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, now it's like, I like, you know, like, I listen to a lot of Run the Jewels, but I also listen to a lot of jazz.
Yeah.
And, but also, for some reason, I kind of like Taylor Swift. I'm not sure what that means.
No, that's fine. I like that one. I have a complex relationship with Taylor Swift's 1989 as well.
Can I ask you one more music question before we call it a day?
Sure.
What's the one, just to bring it sort of slightly back on theme, which is like, what's the one musician you remember learning about from a movie soundtrack and then like you sort of became a fan after you heard like one song or many songs on a movie soundtrack and you're like, ah, that person, I'm going to figure out everything that they've done. So.
Redman, the Riddler off the Batman Forever soundtrack.
Oh my God. Mine also might be from a Batman soundtrack.
The Batman Forever soundtrack is legendary.
Batman Forever and Batman and Robin is also.
Guys, mine's even crazier because it was when I was like 6 years old, but it was Prince off the original Batman soundtrack.
I love it.
Yeah. I fucking loved Prince from that day forward.
Mine has got to be Amy Mann on the Magnolia soundtrack. Changed a lot of my feelings about the world. So,
shouts to you for not picking something off a Batman soundtrack.
Yeah. I mean, now all I want in the world is for Amy Mann to do a track on a Batman soundtrack.
That'll be part of the cool, hip new vision that they're going to bring with Matt Reeves.
Batman, more like Amy Mann, am I right? All right.
Oh, and that is our Earth's Mightiest Summer Mailbag. 2018.
Oh, God,
week,
that fish thing is still there.
Yeah.
Amy Mann. All right.
Neil, what are we doing next week?
Next week, we're going to be experiencing all the predators.
Oh.
We're going to be talking about the new movie, Predator. The Predator? Whatever the new one's called.
Predator.
We also, by then, will have rewatched a bunch of the old ones, including we're doing a thing with the folks in the Patreon Slack, who are secret small council people and higher. It's the highest one. and that'll be fun. So we're going to talk about the Predator franchise, and then we'll do a very stormy discussion of the new film.
So we're going to talk new film, Predator, Predator 2, Alien vs. Predator, AVP Requiem, and then I think that's canonically it.
And but Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
The only person who's promising... Well, okay, two things. The only person who's promising to watch all of the Predator movies is Dave.
Is Dave.
He has to do it for his job anyway.
I'm also reading the comics in case anybody wants.
So cute. I promise to... I will be watching at least one... I've never seen the original Predator, so I'll at least be watching that. Plus anything we watch with the Patreons and Slack, or that might wind up being the same thing. Someone in the Slack suggested that we do a very Shane Black Christmas episode in December, and I kind of like the idea of that.
Damn.
So I do like the idea.
So we might save the Shane Black, the larger Shane Black oeuvre for Christmas, or the holiday season, I should say, and just focus on the Predators for now. So,
yeah, all the Predators. It's crazy. There's gangs and there's jungles and there's impregnated in already pregnant women. It's anyway, all the Predators.
All next the week. Predators.
All the Predators. Until then, Neil, where can people find more of your work online?
You can get the MoviePass article that I've been threatening to write now for 3 weeks, probably on filmschoolrejects.com. And if it happens, I will tweet it via my Twitter account, @rejects. Also, don't forget to follow our show, @StormOfSpoilers. And if you have things to say, StormOfSpoilers@gmail.com.
And Joanna Robinson?
Oh, you can find me on Vanity Fair. You can follow me on Twitter @JoeWroteThis. You can hear me talking about TV in general on the Still Watching podcast. We're on a little, like, fall TV tour era. Or award season, which is just ramping up, over on Little Gold Men. We will be talking about the Telluride Film Festival, and then the following week, the Toronto Film Festival. So get hype! It's Oscar season already! Bye! You can feel
it. And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter @DA7E. You can find me at FightingInTheWorm.com, Polygon.com, Thrillist.com, etc., etc. And, guys, it's like September. If you've managed not to fall down, keep it going. We are so close. Don't fall down, 2018.